and welcome back to the Double Take podcast with Jess and Jenny, where we give our takes on all things TV. Today, we will be recapping and reacting to episodes 6 and 7 of Shogun, episode 6, Ladies of the Willow World, and episode 7, titled A Stick of Time.
Before we go like any further, I do want to notice, or I do want to mention the episode 7 was called A Stick of Time, and they did say Stick of Time more in this episode than any other episode. And I didn't realize that was the title at the time. And I was like, wow, they're really, really going hard on this stick of time. Like, that's cool that they measure time in like a stick that it takes to burn. But they're saying it an awful lot. And now knowing that it's the title makes a lot more sense. They're really hitting it hard.
Do you mean they normally don't say the title in the episode?
I haven't noticed it in that way, but without knowing what the title of this episode was, I specifically picked up on the fact that they were saying stick of time a lot. And I was like, huh, this is the first time that's happened. And they're really like going in.
What does it mean? It means it's the length of time.
Like, I think it's almost like like a candle almost, how people used to tell time and how long it took a candle to burn down. I think it's the same concept. So it's instead of an hour, it's like the stick of time. But everyone was like, I don't know how many sticks of time I have left. And he was like, would you like to meet me for one stick of time? And I was like, wow, okay.
For sure, they were saying it a lot. I didn't know if I missed where they explained the unit of measurement or if you just knew that one from life.
I think the latter. I don't remember them explaining it either because I sort of was just extrapolating. I was like, yeah, they do that with candles. I don't know.
There were at least 2, maybe 3, In episodes 6 and 7 combined, at least 2 or 3 units of measurement that I had to look up.
Which other ones?
I think the other ones were monetary. Koku, when he gives him – well, we'll get to this, but I looked up the conversions for everything. So in the first one I wrote down was, after the earthquake, Torinaga grants Blackthorn a fief, and he says it's worth 600 koku. And I was like, I got to know – how much money that is. Or he said it in like a yearly salary, I think is the way he worded it, or it seemed like that's what he was going for, if not. And so someone on Reddit, if it's wrong, blame them. I can't say that's like the best source I've seen, but that's where I found this. One koku is 330 pounds of rice, approximately. And that's how they measured like fief. Salaries,
sure, yeah.
Was in rice because that was like the output of the fief. So that was a standardized unit in feudal Japan.
It's cool.
And it roughly equaled the amount of rice it takes to feed one person for a year. And according to the Reddit person, it is roughly $160,000 per year in today's money. So it was like a pretty sizable gift. Like, he keeps mentioning how he's getting all these generous gifts but not able to go home or whatever.
Or get his men.
He says that a bunch of times. But yeah, I mean, that is not like royalty at this time, but it is definitely generous. So I was happy somebody did that math.
I know, yeah.
Even if they just made it up, because I was like, is that a insulting gift? Is it a really, really good gift? Like, how would you have known? And they don't explain.
They don't. They don't accept for, like you said, him – like Blackthorn later saying, like, you've been giving me all of these gifts, like, too generous. So I just assume that everything is generally like middle to, I don't know. There's always like a little bit of a backhanded possibility, but yeah, that's cool. It's good. It's cool you looked it up.
There's one more. I, not to front load the episode with numbers, but
I like fun facts.
When Mariko tries to purchase like a knight with the courtesan.
Yes, yeah.
The owner of the brothel says, like, it will cost 500. The subtitle said M-O-N-M-E. I always struggle with the pronunciations of some of the words that I don't know because they're speaking Japanese and I'm reading the subtitles. And I don't always follow, like, when they say the words that translate to the words I'm reading. So M-O-N-M-E. It is roughly equal to about $1,500 is what she was asking for one
stick of
night.
Time. How many sticks?
Yes. I don't know. I don't know what the mon meter stick translation is. Conversion is.
Wow. I mean, yeah. First of all, not brothel, tea house.
thought it was funny that Mariko says, like, I'm not trying to buy all of your tea houses. So I was like, I got to know how much 500 Monmi is.
Yeah.
If it's enough to buy all the tea houses. And then $1,500 was like more than I expected, but also like a little less with that reaction.
Right. I liked, I thought of that as she was being snarky, Mariko. Like, I liked that exchange of the two women being like power plays, because it did seem, it seemed like she was saying, like, I'm not asking to buy all of your tea houses, as though she's sort of belittling the owner, or like the, what's the name of a person who, like, her pimp? No, what's the, I don't know. Who's the owner of a brothel?
Her name is Jin.
No, I know, but what's the like title?
I don't know what the employment title would be. The madam?
The madam. Thank you. I mean, I guess not in feudal Japan.
Is that like derogatory though?
I don't
know. Yeah, it's definitely not the title there.
The lady.
They don't give her a title, I don't think. There's a word that they use that means like courtesan. I can't remember what the word is, but I had to look it up. There were a lot of like new vocab terms and units of measurement in these episodes, and they don't explain them, which I like, but my need to understand what's happening, I like keep pausing it and looking things up, and then I get distracted, and then I have to go back, and it takes me forever.
You need like the annotated guide to flip through while you're watching. Also, yeah, these episodes in particular, but all of Shogun, require a lot of focus. I look away for a second and then I'm like, oh, right, I don't understand Japanese. Like, I need to actually look at the screen for a second.
It's that combined with there are a lot of characters.
Yeah.
When they do flashbacks, it's not always clear that we're in a flashback. Like, you have to watch every single moment so closely to be like, okay, who's this person? How are they related? And there's been very little, especially past episodes like 1 and 2, very, very little like exposition dumping. Like, you just really have to watch to see what's going on. And so especially like family ties, I'm like listening so closely for like, did they say grandpa?
Right. Who's who? Like, who's related?
And so I wrote down some of those this time, because did you know? I don't know if we just learned this in episode 6 or if this was one that just totally passed me by until 6 episodes in, that Hiromatsu is Buntaro's dad. Was I supposed to know that?
I think so. But I don't know that it was like emphasized, because he came in. Okay, let me put this together. In like the second episode, when why can't I remember her name, is asked to come in and be the translator for Toranaga.
Mariko?
Thank you. Mariko, Lady Mariko. Yeah, yikes. This is gonna go.
If you can't
well.
Get her name, this is a long episode.
When she's first asked to be the like official translator, the grandfather comes in. Like, and they say something like the deference that both of them give it. I think they mention that he's his father, or it's like implied Buntaro's father. But I think that's the only mention of it until then. Like, he sort of has a reverence for Mariko that his son doesn't have in that scene, and that there's like tension that causes. And then you sort of forget about it until this episode where they remind us again.
Well, I felt like it was new info, so I wrote it down so that I wouldn't forget. So Buntaro is also the uncle of Fuji, which we did know. I know they said that at least in passing a few episodes ago, but I had to remind myself. I'm just putting the family tree together. Like, if this were a book, this would be me like flipping back, bookmarking the front page where it actually lists out. Like, I need the family tree and the maps and the – yeah, those things really help me.
I bet someone has made that. We should.
Do you think? But it's a book.
Yeah.
So do you think that those exist in the book?
Oh, I don't know if they exist in the book, but I'm sure someone who is like a fan, part of the fandom, has made these family trees and then like also maps and stuff. I will say, you were mentioning about the flashbacks being particularly, you have to like be paying a lot of attention. Even the start of episode 7, I thought I had missed something. Before I realized that it was a flashback that we were starting with, I was like, whoa, hold on. I've completely forgotten.
I restarted that scene.
Yeah, me too.
I did the same thing. They put the description at the end of the scene.
Yeah, which I kind of
liked. Toranaga's first battle like 46 years ago. I liked it, but I just always feel stupid.
Me too.
Like, I always feel like I'm a step behind watching this show, which is fine, but I do think it's – exhausting. Mm. It's not making me like it less. I wish I had a few moments of reprieve throughout that weren't so exhausting. I keep thinking I'm going to like this so much better on a second watch. And I think that that's a testament to like it being really good storytelling and deep and thoughtful. But it's also, I don't know. I think that's going to keep me from having this at like my number one show of the year. Just like I do feel a little bit like I'm working.
I wonder how much of that though is because you feel like you need to have notes for podcasts and things. Like I agree with you, but I feel like I would be letting myself sort of relax a little bit more if I didn't think I needed to talk about it so soon. And then would like rediscover things on a second watch and be like, wow, I can't believe I missed that. But trying to get everything and like notice every interesting choice and stuff. Yeah, that is kind of exhausting.
Let's jump into episode 6. Episode 6 is pretty much Lady Oshiba's episode. We finally see who she is, what her backstory is. Obviously, other things happen in this episode too, but it really is focused around her in a way that like one or two episodes ago was focused around Mariko. And I like the way that they're doing that. It's not as heavy-handed as some shows where they literally like name the episode, the character, and we get like a deep dive into the person. But it is clear enough that you can make that distinction. Episode 7, on the other hand, is more focused on Torunaga and his backstory. But to go back to episode 6. So Lady Oshiba, we didn't really know anything about, unless, again, this is one of those things where we sort of knew things and I just forgot them. But we get her backstory in the first moments of this episode. We fling back 22 years ago to Mariko and Lady Oshiba as friends.
Little kid friends. Yeah.
And I love the way this tells us not only who Lady Oshiba is and what her political motivations are, like we learn all that in this episode, but also develops this connection between Mariko and Lady Oshiba. And which I think adds so much to it because Mariko has been sort of like an odd character to me thus far. Like in terms of who she is, what does she care about other than wanting to die? But like, how did she get here? What has made her this way? And so the idea that she was friends with Lady Oshiba until her dad, this is where it gets complicated. This is why I wrote all these notes. Her dad kills Lady Oshiba's dad.
I think so. I think that is correct.
That's correct. Okay, yeah. Okay. I had to say it slowly and then think about it to make sure that's what I meant to say. But that is what I meant to say. And she, presumably, she being Lady Oshiba, would hate Mariko, but she doesn't really say anything about Mariko. We haven't heard adult Lady Oshiba say anything negative or at all about Mariko, but we have heard her say that she hates and wants to kill Torunaga. Yeah. Because she thinks Torunaga was the real
instigator behind
reason that her dad is dead.
Which is interesting and would not surprise me if he's been playing chess with all these people for the last however many years. 20 years? I don't know.
Torunaga is a snaky MF.
He really is. He knows all.
I hate when we curse because then I have to bleep it out. I don't trust a single thing that he has ever said. And so that little bit of info combined with episode 7, where we see like more about him and how he's been kind of like immortalized in these myths that aren't true. Like I find that very interesting in his development as well.
Yeah. Yeah. I liked the, it's not really a juxtaposition, but I liked how different these two episodes, 6 and 7, were. 6 felt super slow is the wrong word to use, but it was like very, I think we said this offline, it was a very talky episode. And then 7 was much more, even though still strategy and talky, it felt like it had a lot more action to it. And it was still like picking a few characters to focus on. For episode 6, you mentioned like the parallels between Lady Oshiba and Mariko. Loved that. And then in this one, sort of the same thing. We go back in time for Torunaga and also the like shapes some of the relationships that he had with his brother and other people in the past. And I really liked how these two episodes achieved essentially the same thing, but in two different ways. And I don't know. I'm just singing the praises of Shogun again because it's like such a good balance. I don't feel bored and I like they're giving me new things at each turn, but still being consistent in how they're telling story.
It's also developing like the different spokes of the wheel sort of like simultaneously before getting to the what I assume will be like a climactic, like who will take the throne, who will win. We're seeing everybody's sort of story and journey to like that position of power.
At the risk of putting too many Game of Thrones parallels in here, when you started describing them as a wheel, I'm like, ooh, and Toranaga is like Daenerys, come to break the wheel of the Japanese feudal system. It really is just like there for the taking, but we can try to avoid that, I feel like.
But I think George R. R. Martin has said, or I made this up, or I saw this on the internet and it's not true, that he was inspired by Shogun.
It would totally not surprise me.
Obviously. It does feel similar in ways that like seem significant. And most fantasy is based off like real, not that Shogun's a true story, but fantasy being, you know, fantasy in the fantastical elements, but not necessarily in the stories. So I see a lot of parallels and I think that that's okay to bring them up.
I just don't want to be a broken record.
I know. I hesitate as well. Going back to episode 6, I wanted to talk about something that we brought up either last episode or two episodes ago about Buntaro. And that's, we're talking about, like, I think my stance was he's abusive and it comes from a place of like protectiveness or jealousy or whatever, like basically like deep emotions about Mariko. And your stance was more like pure sociopath.
I don't think it was pure sociopath. I just thought it was more about his honor in some ways rather than like I thought it was sort of split that way. But you go first.
Like his pride is wounded and he lashes out less so like he feels things for her and lashes out.
I think it's possible that he still feels things for her, but I think the lashing out is the pride. Was my take.
But I think we see in these, yeah, that was your take. I'm wondering if it has changed because when Buntaro goes to Toranaga to beg forgiveness for like causing a scene or whatever in his home in episode 6, he's giving straight up jealousy. Like he says she's always been ice. I mean, they really focus on this in these two episodes. He says, you know, she's always been ice, but she's different around him. And then later in, I think in episode 7, he goes and like wants him dead, like asks Toranaga to kill him. He is straight up jealous.
For sure, he is jealous. I agree with you. I didn't mean to, I don't know if last time you took me saying that I thought his lashing out was coming from a place of pride. But I think that I think pride and jealousy are totally intertwined. And I think he is jealous of the fact that Mariko seems like more of a person with Blackthorn than she ever would with him. But I think that like people who are abusive in that way also are like, well, if she just were different, like I wouldn't get so angry or whatever. Like I think it's all consistent. So I don't know. I don't know what my answer to your question is if I feel differently. But I agree. I totally agree. He's jealous. And it was somewhat touching, I don't know if that's the right word, when in episode 7 he asks, he's like, will you allow me to kill Blackthorn? And then he's like, well, if you think Blackthorn's at fault, you also have to think your wife is. And she's like, no, like it's not her, it's him. Definitely that made me feel a little bit of more empathy to him. Like he's not cold, he's not ice. He does care about her for sure. Like that's been cemented more than just jealousy, I think. Like he does want her alive for whatever reason.
Yeah, I think this is like the first time we saw that I think it is love. I think he has feelings for her sincerely. And I think he just is sort of a not very nice man.
Yeah.
That's probably an understatement, but it is not what I first thought when I started watching it, which I didn't think that he actually cared about her, but little by little we're getting that sense. So that is one thing that I wanted to talk about in this episode. But back to Lady Oshiba and her political machinations. So when she's sitting and watching, I think like the play, I think is when this happens, the lady next to her says, Ishido is no more than the Taiko's favorite Kosho. Mm-hmm. And I looked up that word because it seemed important to know, understand. It basically means squire. So she was, and she says, you're choosing the wrong ally. She's basically like, nah, like Ishido's nothing. Like Ishido was like his servant boy and just happened to like get himself here. Like you're backing the wrong horse. This is also the only person who understands that she is the driving force behind Ishido. Mm-hmm. There's a conversation in the episode with, I don't remember who, but people basically saying like, no way she has anything to do with this. Lady Oshiba like couldn't possibly. So everyone else is underestimating her, which is just classic.
How dare. Yeah.
This story, like this type of story, mm-hmm. and like a woman's involvement. But I found that interesting because I don't think we knew that about Ishido. And they mention like twice in this episode, basically like he came from humble beginnings, mm-hmm. and that he has just like really been power hungry and worked his way up. But we don't understand why she has chosen to ally with him.
Yeah, I'm still waiting for that to sort of unfold. I want more of a backstory, even more about her and possibly Lady Mariko, which I don't know if it's coming. We're on what episode? I keep forgetting how many total episodes there are. Are there only 8?
There will be 10.
There will be 10. Okay. So we're not gearing up for the ending just yet. There is still time for some of that.
Yeah, I think it very much feels like we have the number of episodes left that we have. I think they're actually pacing this well. I did see as a sidebar, I saw yesterday a post saying basically like there's no way that they don't get a second season because of how immensely popular this season is. And I was like, I get it, but what if we just let it be? There's no more content unless James Clavell is about to whip out a second book because the show's done so well. But he wrote that like 40, I don't even know if he's alive.
Right.
The book came out in like the 70s.
I could see them trying to do more backstory, like if there are things that they're cutting out, but that might be, I don't know, like see how that worked out for Game of Thrones and the House Targaryen series. It's not as popular. It's just like, I don't know. I would not enjoy that.
I feel like it would be a continuation. I feel like it would be more like a Game of Thrones season 2, although that's not a good comparison because they always knew that there were going to be like 8 seasons or however. I don't know if they originally planned 8, but
they knew several.
They shouldn't have. Mm-hmm. that aside, where was I before my sidebar?
We were talking about Lady Oshiba and how she was the driving force behind Ishido. And then I sort of took us away from that for a second, but we can return.
Yes. So Lady Oshiba, yeah, we see that she's trying to turn – basically trying to get Ishido to turn the council against Torinaga, and she is dead set on ruining Torinaga, which up to this point we thought was Ishido's mission alone. We did not know the depth of Lady Oshiba's treachery or plotting, which did a lot for my enjoyment of the series, actually. I like that there felt like a lot to be revealed. This episode gave us a glimpse of like what's actually behind the curtain. And I watched actually these episodes back to back. And I was very happy that I had another episode to watch. Even though it does sort of feel like work. I was happy to have more right away. The waiting is not my favorite.
Yeah. Yeah. And it's nice that Lady Oshiba is like the other – emerging as the other chess player. Like we keep talking about Torinaga as this like – he's got his hand, he's puppeting all of these pieces, but I think we're learning that she is similarly moving pieces around the board. They're playing each other, at least now. That's what I'm getting from this, which is very cool.
Yeah, she's playing everybody. We don't really understand yet Ishido's, like, how is he playing her back? I don't think he is. I think he's just listening to her. I think what we're supposed to get from this episode is like, he's a simple little man who is power hungry, but not as smart as Oshiba and Torinaga. But we don't really know yet if that's true. That's just, I think that that's the vibe they're setting up. And we haven't really seen him. We thought he was making decisions on his own, but we see now that he's not, and that he's like a little puppet that's being his strings are being pulled by Oshiba. But going away from that for a moment, actually, before we talk about Crimson Sky, we can talk about I had one fun little note in episode 6 when Jin, the brothel owner, is talking to Mariko and Fuji is there. She says to Mariko, "I've heard you and the Anjin are never apart." Fuji, like, they literally show Fuji and she is taking a sip of tea and side-eyeing, literally giving the side eye to Mariko. And I thought that was hilarious.
I forgot about that part. Yeah, that is funny.
Favorite moment of the episode,
she
for sure.
She could have backed up her girl, though. That was a perfect time for her to step up and do her duty, but nah.
Girlfriend knows what's up. She is more aware than Mariko and Blackthorn assume she is.
Oh, yeah. I feel like they, at this point, have stopped underestimating her. I kind of feel like they're now like a little trio, but maybe that's just me.
Well, I think like they still think nobody knows that they slept together because they lied to Fuji about it.
I guess. But people are lying all the time. And now they're
like fighting.
Yeah.
But I think that they really think they like got away with it. And Mariko is like offended now every time somebody assumes that she's like into him. I think she's a little naive in that manner. But okay, back to Ishido is trying to get the council over to his side. He's like lied to them all and said the Torinaga was a part of a plot to like murder the heir or to harm him, I think is the way they put it. And so he appoints a new person, a new regent to the council. But then the one guy like doesn't accept the appointment. And he's like, "We'll talk about this later," or whatever he says to him. And then literally kills everybody.
Wait, well, Ishido? Okay. It's like, who are we talking about? But yes, yeah.
Ishido kills Sugiyama and like everybody that Sugiyama is with and says, and then we see Torinaga in the next scene is like, "Oh, Sugiyama and his people like ran into bandits."
Mm-hmm. So that clearly, classic line, that old chestnut.
Yeah. Ishido, I know we've seen this before, right? I think this is the second time that they've used this maneuver where they're like, "I'm going to kill people and I'm going to pretend like it was wood bandits."
But that the first time we actually saw it happen, like we saw the whole setup and then follow through and then the lying afterwards. But yes, so now we have an idea of that's just what people say to get off.
And yeah, and he really brutally murdered everybody.
But I think the idea is everyone knows, like that's code for someone's
been. Oh, you think Torinaga knew?
Yeah,
I feel like the way he relays it, he's just like, matter of fact, like they were attacked by. I'll have to rewatch that to see if I missed the subtext.
Maybe it's just because there's that we have that past, and he knew that that's what happened. Well, who was it?
Yabushige.
Thank you. Yabushige, like Torinaga knew that that was Yabushige's plan, and so I think that setup made me think like, oh yeah, he definitely knows that this bandit line is just code.
I think whether or not he knows for sure, he knows Ishido is up to no good all the time. So it would make sense that he would suspect that. And then I don't want to skip too far ahead into episode 7 in terms of how he finally gets the council that he is after. But I will, I guess, just skip ahead.
Go for it.
We meet Torinaga's brother, half-brother. We meet him. We think that he's kind of a good guy.
Jovial.
And then we find out that he's really not and that he has taken a position on the council at Ishido's request. All in the span of one episode. It was quite the whiplash situation.
Super slimy. But yeah.
They did kind of set us up for it because like why did Torinaga hate him? Why hadn't they talked in a while? He like didn't say nice things about his brother. And then we meet him and he's like super friendly and he's like sharing stories. We do get the moment where he like shames Torinaga by telling a story about how he like poops his pants.
And the whole room goes silent and it's very awkward.
Because you like do not do that in polite Japanese society, which I thought again was like a really – fun, not fun, but like there is like lightness to this show, even when there's like no obvious lightness at all. There are these moments where like that's humorous.
Oh yeah. The other, I laughed out loud when Yabushige was starting to like try to spar with Blackthorn, and you just like hear Blackthorn sort of like in her monologue, like, okay, like I'm picking up the sword slowly. Like there's a lot of those sort of light moments sprinkled in there, even while the characters are afraid they might die or like.
Yeah, I also laughed out loud at that same part. He says like what sounded to my ears like a very 2024 sort of comment, which was, it appears that we're doing this
That's
now
the
or
one.
Something like that.
Yeah.
That doesn't seem period appropriate, but it was funny.
But yeah, so the brother, he's taken the seat. And also, I was curious about, did you look up anything about sort of the polite society / the rules of this, of everything that's happening? Like when he goes to hand the order to the son, that's like, oh, and also you have to commit seppuku. And his father's like, don't accept it. Is it like, if it doesn't touch your hands, you're not accepting the contract? I was wondering if that was just like a gut reaction or if it actually meant something. And I didn't bother to look it up.
Oops. I did not look it up. My feeling was basically like, why would you
take this?
By taking it, you're acknowledging the brother's like standing as having any actual meaning. And Torunaga's basically saying like, don't accept that. He doesn't give you orders. Like he's not in charge. He has no power. By accepting it, you're acknowledging his like position over you.
Yeah. Yeah, that makes sense.
I think it's like more what Torunaga's reaction was about.
I was wondering, I mean, I just know that there's so much tradition involved. And part of me was just wondering if this was another game that they were playing and that it was important that he not take the scroll. But that interpretation makes sense too.
No, I wondered that too. And I don't know for sure that that's not. I didn't look it up. And I don't know if that would even be a thing that like, are they actually like rules or how that works? But my assumption ended up being just the hierarchy of it. Mm-hmm. I think the initial, like my initial reaction was like shock of like, oh, how would the brother have done this? And why would he like tell his nephew to kill himself? But what we're supposed to glean, I think, is like there was no reason for his brother to be like – in agreement at all to help Torunaga. And so Torunaga was sort of like wrong to trust him in the first place. So that's what I'm trying to figure out now is like, is Torunaga a silly goose or was he somehow like anticipating all of the, like at the end when he chooses to surrender, like, is that real? Are there things going on in Torunaga's head that we don't know?
I mean, we've been set up to believe that he's got some other plan, even if he's not sharing it. And I wonder if that is – I mean, I think Blackthorn thinks that he's just giving up because he's sort of like, this guy's just given up on you and walks away. But part of me is wondering if he's just like – he's playing you again. Like he played you before. He's playing – I can't remember exactly what his words were, but they were – he makes that grandstand addressing everyone
so
formally.
Yeah, I thought that was weird.
Part of me thinks that he's sort of like – are you believing a word that comes out of this guy's mouth? He's just sort of like walking and like talking in circles again. He's not telling you anything. You're not going to know what's going on. You're just like following him blindly. He's got plans. He's not going to let us know. And if he like his survival is all he cares about. That's a lot of subtext I'm putting into his rant, but that was sort of the vibe I was getting.
Yeah. Cause what he says is basically Torunaga has agreed that you're all going to die. That's like what he says out loud, basically, is by surrendering, you're all going to die. Why would you go with him? So I couldn't figure out – this is one of those times where it's like, am I supposed to look this closely at the acting and the potential – like what is he saying without saying it? Or is it just – like am I putting those words into his mouth and he's not actually saying them? Because I thought he was like – not actually like basically I agree with you. I thought in the moment that he was not saying what he really felt, but I couldn't figure out why he would go out of his way to stand up and be like, you're all agreeing to be murdered. Why? And so I'm questioning myself.
The only thing he says in Japanese is "you're all dead." But yeah, I don't know. It was a little ambiguous, I guess, is the end point to all that.
I'm sure we'll find out in the next episode or so what Torunaga's really up to. I think there's no chance, as we've now said a few times, there's no chance he's really surrendering. And he always has a plan in his back little pocket that he doesn't share with anyone. But to be determined. I also thought it was like kind of cute that he named it Crimson Sky.
It's Operation Crimson Sky is very...
I feel like we're in a James Bond movie all of a sudden.
I know. But what do we think it is? No one said. What do you think it means?
He did say.
What?
Oh, he didn't say.
Like, what is the plan?
He said basically like he goes and kills everyone and then he takes over as ruler. But you think Crimson Sky means like how does he kill them all?
I mean, that's your whole plan? Right. I mean, is it like with the blood of the people? Is it like, but also is there more to it? Because Blackthorn keeps asking questions about it, and either Torunaga keeps like shooting him down because it's secret and he doesn't have like the clearance to know or whatever, or he doesn't know himself. And I'm wondering which it is.
Or he just doesn't want to talk about it because it's
secret.
It's a secret.
Well, that's what I meant when I said Blackthorn doesn't have the clearance. It's like,
oh, I did not think about this, but that would be a cool twist. Like if Crimson Sky was actually some sort of like crazy weapon or plan that we're not expecting. I kind of just thought he was like going in guns a-blazing, and by guns I mean swords.
Yeah. Do you think Blackthorn will get his ship back? First of all, the thing that he keeps asking about in every episode, can I have my ship? And also, where are my men, please?
I don't think he gets them back ever. That's because if he got them back, he would just sail away and there would be no more show.
What else in these two episodes seemed worthy of? Oh, we didn't talk about the fact that in episode 6, Torunaga is essentially like, I want you to prove that you're loyal to me and that you're not getting too close to Blackthorn by like going and taking him to the brothel. And like, you are to stay there while he does his thing with the lady and then bring him back or whatever. He's very much like, this is a punishment and I know what you're up to, and like, cut it out.
And then in episode 7, he asks her to basically choose between him and Blackthorn. Mm-hmm. To which she responds,
kill me,
please
now.
Let me die tonight. Please finally let me not live anymore.
She's like, I can't possibly. God,
she is such a freaking good actor, because I'm watching her basically beg for death. And it's so believable in a way that the motivation makes very little sense to my brain. Like having that much, I don't know what the word is, like pride's not the right word, but this like idea that you have to die because your
for the honor of your family
died. Yeah, the honor of your family. And she just is so believable in this role, which I get, not to say this for like the millionth time, but after watching Monarch, you just would not have known that that was in there. And I can't believe I'm happy for her that she got this part and that they might have filmed simultaneously, because that was lucky on her part. But I had one more thing from episode 7. Well, the very end of episode 7. The very last thing that happens is bonkers.
Oh, wait.
The was that the nephew? Head? Not the nephew. The son of
– Oh,
the head. No, the head's a thing too, but the son is trying to – Torunaga's son tries to go after – the brother. What the heck's the brother's name? Siki? That is one that I did not write down. He goes after the brother. We're going to use his epithet. And I am so convinced that he is about to slice and dice brother. And then he freaking slips and stabs himself. And that, I literally said, oh, damn, out loud.
Did he stab himself? I thought it was just that he like whacked his head on the... Like his, he has got a cranial bleed or whatever. Yeah, that was a real, real bummer. And then the like end of the episode with just the sound of the river running over his lifeless body. I don't know how much you watched that, but it was like a minute long of just like.
Oh, I watched the whole thing. I was mesmerized.
Crazy. Yeah.
It's really for well some done. Reason. I don't know why I was so mesmerized.
It was, yeah, I don't know. It was something about that like final
It was cinematic. They really do. They nail the cinematic moments. They hit them out of the park. The sun dying, I think, was my last note.
Yeah. I mean, we didn't talk. I thought you were talking about the head because I'd forgotten exactly what scene it ended on, despite it being a very memorable last scene. I thought you were going to mention the head for Yabushige when he opens up. And I got to admit, I kind of got lost there for a second. I was like, whose head is that? Was that before?
Whose head was it?
I don't know.
Oh, he says, I thought you were saying it was somebody we knew. I think we just know that it was a guy that they sent to try to broker like a deal with Ishido. Oh. And Ishido's response was like, a deal, cut the guy's head off and send it back. No deal.
Was that before the whole like sword scene?
Yeah, it was like towards the end. I believe it was towards the end.
Yeah, I think that about wraps it up. Both good episodes, different, like we said, achieving a lot. Excited to see what happens next. I wonder if Toranaga will show any outward upsetness at his son being dead, or if he will keep his sevenfold fence super strict. I feel like we haven't really seen a lot of emotion from him except after that earthquake.
Nice callback.
Thank you. Thank you. I think that's it.
Catch us next time for more Shogun. In the meantime, we might talk about other shows that we've been watching, like Three Body Problem comes to mind. So stay tuned, subscribe, throw us a like, throw us a review if you're feeling charitable. And don't forget to subscribe to our newsletter where we do written reviews weekly, and that will be linked in the show notes. Thanks for listening.